Hey, friends, welcome to another episode of the Proud of Powerhouse podcast. It is a beautiful day here in Washington, and I am so excited to share this interview with you. I am chatting with Grace Hayden again today. Grace has been on the podcast before when it was a brand new baby podcast, and I'm so excited to bring her back. Since we last spoke, Grace has sold one of her product-based businesses, and she is still growing and working on her second business, which she runs with her family, which she also intends to sell. And I think that is absolutely incredible. I'll tell you what, I did not realize that businesses were something you could sell. For a long time, I did not think of my business as an asset, something that could be sold. So I really loved this conversation with Grace. You will love her. She shares so many wonderful tips. And we talk about her TikTok journey because she is one of those people who has a ton of followers on TikTok. It's been really cool to watch her behind the scenes since I've known her for quite a few years now. She was also part of the last Product Powerhouse Summit, which we hosted in the spring of 2023. And she talked about email marketing, and I heard nothing but rave reviews about her session. And so I'm just so happy and grateful to have her back on the podcast. Quickly, let me introduce you. Grace Hayden is the founder of multiple e-commerce businesses, notably her Turkish towel company, which she sold in 2021. Currently, she is building a family e-commerce business, Yoke Outdoors, which features the Chuck Box Camp Kitchen. And she wrote a book, which I have and we talk about in this episode also. So I am so excited to get to chat with Grace.
You're listening to Product Powerhouse, a podcast to inspire and empower you while you build a powerful product-based business that fuels your passion and feeds your family. I'm your host, Erin Alexander. I run an e-commerce web design agency that helps shop owners build, grow, and scale. This podcast is all about actionable strategies specifically for your product-based business. So friend, grab a nice coffee and let's chat, because DIYing your business doesn't mean you have to do it alone.
Hi, Grace. Thank you so much for being on the podcast again. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be back.
I am so happy to have you again. So Grace is on the podcast, episode number 38. We just looked it up. We were talking about then the power of selling one product. And now we're going to talk about selling your business, but we have a lot of good stuff to talk about. Before we jump in, let's introduce you to everyone listening. So tell us who you are and what.
Sure. So my name is Grace, and I'm an e-commerce expert. I've been doing this for over 20 years. My background's in retail, and I had a Turkish towel company that I built up and sold. I think we'll be talking about that. I'm working on another business right now with actually my husband, and my mom and sister are involved, and we're building that one up with the same intent to exit. And I just wrote a book all about starting an e-commerce business from scratch. So those are the big things that I've been working on recently.
The big hitters, yes. You have quite a bit of experience in the e-commerce world. I like how you mentioned that you started in retail, because so many of us maybe even discredit what we've done in retail. I know I did for a long time. I was like, oh, I was just a cashier. Oh, I was just a stock person. Oh, I was just a team manager. But then I started thinking about how all of that applies to running your business and the things you can take away from those moments. So I love that you incorporate that. So I have Grace's book, Start an E-commerce Business from Scratch. And it is a great how-to guide. You walk us through starting a business from day zero. You don't even have an idea. This book's going to help you figure out what your idea is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a beginner level, but it's also great to go back to if things aren't working. Is that the way to troubleshoot a business that you're struggling with?
Yes. I love that. And I'm so glad you created this book. So I know you had the goal to write for a long time. So how does it feel to have your book published?
It feels really good. It felt like it brought together everything that I knew, everything that I had learned from starting in college. My college advisor actually advised on this book. So there's a lot of just really good academic information in the book, but it also incorporates my grassroots, pull yourself up by the bootstraps attitude type of building a business, having to be scrappy. taking those two and combining them, because a lot of us are in that situation where we need to be scrappy. Sure, we know the best practice of how to do something. Yeah, wouldn't it be great to have a market research group that we hire? Cool. Most of us can't do that, right? Most of us aren't starting with investors. So I feel like this is just a nice combination of those two situations.
Yeah, I think it's a really good, realistic expectation of what to think about when you're starting a business, because so many of us are having to bootstrap our business. And a lot of the people listening are going to be moms and women who maybe don't have a lot of money to invest heavily in getting a product developed or just investing upfront in a business that isn't viable. But I really love how you talk about making a profit right away, because that is like all the experts out there will tell you, like, oh, your business won't turn a profit for 5 years. And just like you mentioned in the book, I didn't have that luxury. I needed money and I needed it then.
Yeah. And I still, absolutely.
And so this is more of a realistic, how can anybody really start a business, an e-commerce business today from the ground up?
Yeah. And everyone has a different idea of what their business needs to do for them. Some people want this to be their full-time thing. Some people want to be able to contribute to their family income with this. Maybe it's on the side or it's in conjunction with another business. So you can use exactly what's in this book to create that business that's right for you and your situation.
Absolutely. And there's this one section that you said, sometimes you've got to take bold action to get things done. That I was, one bold step is what led me to where I am today. I was working in inside sales of all places at a newspaper company. So I had to call businesses and ask them to buy an ad in the paper. It was awful. I hated it. Oh, I overheard the design department saying, oh, we need a new designer. And then I walked up and I was like pretending to get something off the printer. I've always been interested in design.
That's
and
awesome.
I feel like that led me to the step. And I had worked in design previously at a print shop. So it's not like I was going in, but with no experience, but I'd only been 3 weeks. Like I was brand new. There's so many people listening or who need this book to just encourage them to make that bold step and then to need a guide that says, okay, what do I do after this? What point do I need to file an LC? What point do I need to get an EIN? Broken that down for them in your book. So I'm so glad that you published it and I'm so grateful for your expertise here. One of the things you talk about in here that you and I have talked about is you sold your Turkish towel business a few years ago and you are creating businesses to sell them, which I think is so insightful. So many people start a business without an exit plan, myself included. I don't know how I could exit this business. How did you, what made you think about selling your business in the first place? Because it was successful. Like you were doing really well. So what made you want to sell your Turkish towel business?
It was definitely the goal from the start. I like the idea of you invest money in the stock market and it pays you in the future. I approached it in that same way. I was like, I don't want to work forever. I don't want to work a lot in my business either. I had really young kids when I started the Turkish towel company. We were moving back and forth from Arizona to Wisconsin. We had a dog. It was like this whole kind of whirlwind. And so I only could work a few hours. I only wanted to work a few hours. And so I looked at it like, okay, if I put X amount of time in now, this is something that will pay me in a large sum when I exit, and it's going to make it really worth it. So that time away from my family when I'm working on it is really going to be worth it. Because there's a lot of time and money that goes into building a business where if you don't sell it, you never get paid for that time, right? There's a couple months of startup. There's a lot that goes into it where you're not getting sales. You're not taking orders for at least a few months. So that's when you exit. That's when you get paid for that time. And I just think that's exciting. I also think that a lot of people don't realize that they can sell businesses. And that is one of the benefits of e-commerce, having a physical product. That is one of the key benefits to it. And there's so much money to be made on the exit that I just, especially women, I want more women to know that this is an opportunity and an option for them. You don't have to keep working in your business for it to pay you.
I think that's incredible. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know that it was possible to create a business that you didn't have to work in all the time when I started. So basically, I just created myself a job. And now 7 years
in, I've had to remove myself and working through that with my team and so that I don't have to work 24/7, it's difficult. So I love that you went into it with that idea of selling from the beginning and getting paid from that. I have a little side note. On TikTok, there's a lot of people who are talking about starting a side hustle, right? Do you see those people?
Oh, yeah. That's my algorithm. Yep.
One time there was this girl who was like, I am starting a side hustle and I've spent this much time. I think she was trying to sell digital products on Etsy, like printables. And I've spent this much time. And so far in 2 months, I've made like X amount of dollars. And that to me is just not worth it. So this isn't a side hustle. And I accidentally got into an argument with her. I wasn't trying to be rude, but it just, I guess she took it as rude because I was like, what is the time frame you expect to spend on a side hustle? Like, just point blank, that's what I wanted to know. But that she took that from me thinking that I was like criticizing her. I did not mean it that way. But it was interesting. That's what I was thinking the whole time. There is time you spend in your business that you don't get paid for. And that's why lawyers have billable hours.
Right.
Because that's when they get paid, right?
Yeah, that's such a great question to ask and an expectation to set for yourself as you're going into any sort of new business. What is my actual goal for this? Because when I started it, my goal was not to make $1 million, right? I wanted a really simple business that was very small, very part-time. That was not the end goal for me. So I built it to fit into that container of what do I want this to actually pay me each month? What are the expectations, the goalposts along the way so that I know that I'm on track? And yeah, starting something and expecting a huge turnaround in 2 months is, I think that's a little short-sighted unless that was her goal. So,
right.
Yeah, knowing the goal is so important.
Yes, exactly. How did you go about putting your business up for sale? Is there a place where people buy businesses?
Yeah, so I used a broker and they specialize in e-commerce businesses. It was called Empire Flippers. And it was a great experience generally, but there's a lot that goes into selling the business. So even leading up to the sale, there were some things that I wanted, that I had to focus on. One being growing my email list, two, getting trademarks and registrations, having everything that's a sellable asset. So you want to be able to trademark your business if possible. And you certainly don't want to be doing any sort of copyright infringement, right? You can't sell a business that's doing that. So even if you don't, quote, know that you're infringing on someone's copyright, like it, you got to figure that out, right? So having those types of assets, having a repeat customers was something that they wanted to see. And the number one metric that they looked at was profitability. So the way that they were going to price my business for sale was based mostly on profitability.
Fascinating. For people who are listening, could you break down profitability? Like, we have an idea, but I love the way you break it down in the book, which is why I'm asking you to break it down.
Yeah. Okay. You want to have high margins on your product, or if you don't, which is just the amount that you pay to acquire the good, you want that to be a lot lower than what you can resell it for. And if you can't get a high margin, you need to be able to sell a lot of things. So if you look at Walmart and you say they don't have high margins, yeah, because they're distributing billions of products all the time. So they have a high distribution. So if you're going to sell something that isn't going to give you margins, that needs to be the goal. For me, I don't want to sell millions of products. So you need to have a high margin. And that money is then going to be part of your profitability. It's also going to be part of your expenses. So I am not an accountant. I don't want to act like I am in any way an expert on this topic, but just making sure that what you're spending to acquire the product is a lot less than what you can resell it for. And you're able to sell it for a higher price based on a lot of different things. Who's your target market? Are they willing to spend more for nice packaging? Because if all of a sudden you add nice packaging, you can start to increase the price. Can you sell it in bundles? Can you sell more than one at a time? Okay, now you're increasing the overall average order value. So you're making more per order with the bundle. So there's ways to increase your selling price to be able to increase your margins.
That is so important for product-based businesses. Anyways, so often I hear if I offer a discount or if I offer a
free shipping. That'll cut into my margins. And I'm like, girlfriend, your margins need to be higher if that's the case.
Yeah. So discounting. Okay. Back to you're a retailer. Like this is an important part of owning a e-commerce business. My background's retail. You have a background in retail. E-commerce is in the retail industry. And within retail, discounting is typically part of a pricing strategy. So you have to know your margins and know your retail price in a way that you have to set it in a way that you can discount. I don't even know if there's a business out there that hasn't discounted items at some point, right? Discounting is part of the retail cycle.
Yes, it is part of a strategy. And I like how you use, I don't know if you talk about this in the book because I just got to the pricing section, but I know you were just part of my summit and you talked about businesses opting in to the email list. And part of there is a little bit of a strategy where you offer a discount. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's both sides. There is a strategy for discounting and there is a strategy for not discounting, like artists and handmade businesses. Maybe they don't want to discount. And I completely understand that strategy also. But I do think that there is another part of it where it's valuable to offer a discount and it makes sense as long as you are pricing it so that you can do that without losing money.
Right. And a pricing strategy doesn't just mean a discount. It can also mean like a free gift or a value add of some sort. So an artist who doesn't want to discount this original oil painting totally makes sense. Maybe they can offer postcards of the same painting as prints as this free gift with it. So now you're just kind of mm-hmm. adding another layer. You're enhancing the buying experience, but you need to account for those postcards are going to cost you maybe $10, $15 to get printed. So that's where you need to look at. That's part of your discounting strategy, but you're not lowering the price of what you're selling.
On this topic of pricing, I love how you say you're in the business to make money. Otherwise, it is a hobby. I almost said hobbit. But that is a piece of it too, because so many of the people that I have coached with or worked with are not covering their expenses or not covering their materials, especially in the handmade industry. And you mentioned that actually in the book, that if you are in the handmade industry, you need to account for your time. You need to account for your materials. And if you are not making money, then this is a hobby. And that's okay. Hobbies are okay. You're allowed to have hobbies.
100%. And again, I think this is, all goes back. What's your goal? There's a lot of people mm-hmm. who just want to create art and they want to share it with others, and sharing it and selling it just funds the hobby. And that's wonderful if that's the goal. I think also knowing that if you do a handmade business, there's two business models in there. And so this is where really knowing your numbers is important, because you're not only running a retail business where you need to know your retail numbers and retail pricing, you're running a manufacturing business. And so you need to know your manufacturing costs and your labor costs. And those are two separate things. And that's why sometimes the handmade business feels a little bit confusing or murky, especially when you're doing your year end and having to count your inventory costs, right? There's a lot that it goes into the accounting side of a handmade business. It's because it's two businesses in one. And I think understanding that clarity helps make it more understandable. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I need to figure out my labor costs and my materials costs separately. And then my retail cost is based on the cost of goods sold created from the labor and materials. Yeah.
Yes. That's so important. If you think of it as a separate thing, like this is the final product, and then price it for retail as the final product, not all the things that you put into it.
Yes.
That's going to be key for pricing handmade businesses.
Yep, exactly. Yep. There's two pricing strategies that you need to do.
Yes. Another thing you talk about, I've heard you talk about this often, is that running a business is a formula. It is not a personal thing. And once you stop realizing that you're unique, then things will shift. And I really love that perspective. And I want you to talk about it, but I want to tell you why I love it so much. I think it's because so many times, let's say we fail to hit like a revenue goal. We think, I'm a failure. I didn't get there. I can't do this. But if we think about it like a formula, then we just know we didn't put the right input somewhere. Somewhere we need to put a different input, right? So a lot of times in my experience, that's marketing. You just don't have enough eyes on your stuff to hit the revenue goals that you're trying to hit. But I'd love to hear your take on business as a formula and the five essential what is it? Five. You said five.
The five P's of retail. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I feel like understanding this also gives so much clarity and removes that like murky. Why isn't this working? Because we've all been there. I've certainly been there thinking I have everything in place and it's still not working. There's five things every retail e-commerce business needs to have. And that is your product, your person, price, which we were talking about, your place, which is where you're selling, and promotion. That's how you're going to drive traffic. Those five things, everything that you're doing in your business fits into one of those pillars. So once you know that, and this is what really the focus of the book is all about. It's broken down into these five pillars. Because once you figure these out, again, you can troubleshoot. If it's not working, and you know what these are, you can take a step back and look at your business. And you're like, oh, this is why it's not profitable because I haven't done my pricing strategy, or I'm not getting orders because I'm not doing anything to drive traffic, or I'm not driving traffic because I don't really know where to find my target market because I haven't figured out who my target market is. So all of them work together. And I truly believe that once you understand that, it just removes this confusion of how do I actually do this? And it lets you know that, yes, business is not unique. There's not a single business that can exist without these five things. I think it's powerful to understand them.
I think it's powerful to understand them too, because as I've heard you talk about this more and more, I've started to see that in my own. Okay, maybe we didn't book that sale. It doesn't mean anything about me. It means you need to bring another person in or you need to get another lead in my like service-based business. Mm-hmm. But I can see that for e-commerce businesses and like some of my clients where they're like, sales are down and you used to be running Pinterest ads and now you're not. So that decreased your traffic. You used to be sending weekly newsletters and you haven't emailed your list in 8 months. That's the reason. And so it really does allow you to troubleshoot it and look at it from a data standpoint instead of, I suck, I can't do this.
Yes. Yeah. It removes that personal guilt or frustration. Also, this is what I learned. Like, this is nothing new, right? This is what I learned, the foundation in my retail 101 classes in college. And I remember sitting there thinking, sure, that's what a big company would need. That's fine for the Walmarts that we're studying and the Targets, but I don't need to have that. And so I spent so much money on this degree and I still was like, I don't need that in my business. So it's easy to try to skip it or to think that you don't need it, but it's every single business, no exceptions.
And I do love how you remind people that they're still special. They're still unique. And what they bring to the business is still special and unique, but the business itself is not.
Yes. Yeah. You get to insert yourself into that framework.
It's such a shift from how I looked at my business for like maybe the first 5 years, where I was like, I'm not doing enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. And it really feels like so much pressure has been lifted when I think about it in terms of a formula. Okay, how can I bring more people in? I know I have the ideal client, right? I just need more eyes. Or I know that maybe the pricing is off. And so maybe I need to adjust things there. So for me, just learning this and really internalizing it, because it takes a few times of hearing it for you to realize, oh, she's right.
Yeah. And you know, so many people, this is where I made my huge mistake, want to skip over that target market and understanding that. And a big reason I believe why we skip over that is because it feels vague and you're having to make up this target market person, right? Everyone's, oh, just come up with their name and their age and make up this imaginary person that's going to be your target market. And I truly believe that in the beginning, when you're just getting started, it's so much easier and clearer to make yourself your target market. And that gives you a foundation to work from that is tangible, where you're like, oh, I know parts of myself that I can turn into this target market. It just makes it more understandable. As your business grows, that might shift, but really like selling a product that makes sense for you to sell based on you as the target market makes it so much easier to get started. So that's really the start of the book, is you need to find your product that you're going to sell and your target market and combining those two. How are you aligning yourself as your target market to this product? And why is this product different for this person? And when you know those two things, it becomes so much easier to sell it, where you can speak directly to this person it's not just a product anymore. It's like the product for them. You become the number one thing for that target market. It becomes so much easier to market. Are they actually on Pinterest? Not everyone is. Are you on Pinterest? Cool. Your target market is on Pinterest, right? And then it's easy to show up on Pinterest because it's part of who you are. So I really like that, removing the murkiness of your target market by making it at least one part of who you are, one of your identities, one of your values, one of your personalities.
Yeah, I really like that perspective. I felt that same way when I started my business. There was a lot of my ideal client that I saw in myself. I actually do remember having a conversation with someone who was hiring me to design a logo years and years ago. And I asked her what her ideal client was. And she sells like those wax melts, but a little bit different. And she said her ideal client was anyone with a nose.
Oh, yeah.
No, and my dog has a nose and she can't buy your stuff.
Yeah, it's, you really have to know, even, okay, this is for moms. What? There's so many different types of moms. Like, you have to get so much more clear. For me, with my Turkish towel company, I really messed it up because I did not make myself the target market in the beginning. I was like, oh, she's in her 20s and she likes to vacation in Tulum and she's single. I could not relate to that person in any way. So once I removed her as my imaginary target market, I made it myself in one piece of myself. I was a mom, but I was also into minimalism. And so I combined those two. So my target market became this persona of a minimalist mom. And having that persona really clarified things. And then I could show up on minimalist podcasts. I could show up in minimalist blog posts. It just made it so much easier to get in front of the right customers because I was already that person. And I love the idea of having a persona as your target market. Like, what are two or three words that really describe this person? Because words are powerful, and it helps. Like, a minimalist mom is, you can picture that person, right? There's an image. And so creating a persona for your target market is really helpful.
Yes. I can tell you how I messed up my target market.
Ooh, yeah. What'd also, you do?
So in the beginning of my business, I had created an ideal client and I had to base some of it. She's a mom. She's starting a business, whatever. And I struggled because I kept wanting to create content that taught people how to do things I knew how to do. And so for years, I resisted that because I didn't want to be teaching people because honestly, because I could charge more for doing it for them, right? And I needed to make an income. I was the sole breadwinner for a chunk of time. I had two kids. And just recently, I started to realize that if my ideal client really is that person who wants to learn how to do the things that I want to do, then they're not going to hire me to do the thing for them. Like, they want to know how to do it. They want to DIY it. They want to learn. And that is a type of person also.
Yes, absolutely.
I can see how I've shifted my business that way and also how I've created a service that provides that because I still do design for people, but I don't do the whole package anymore. I create them a foundation that they can build on and I teach them how to build on that because even if you don't want to build your website from scratch, in the e-commerce world, you have to know how to do stuff. You have to know how to upload your own products. You have to know how to create a new landing page if you need one because you just can't rely on someone else. And I don't think it's smart for you to completely rely on someone else for your website because then you lose control over it. So I shifted all of those gears to be more geared towards the people who like to take action, who like to get their hands dirty, not just someone who wants it all done for them and wants nitpicky about what fonts they use.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's that shift allows you to create products for that person too, right? Knowing that she was a minimalist mom, I shifted the colors of the towels that I was selling. I shifted the bundles that I was selling. I got away from like bright, bold colors and was like, okay, what would she want in her minimalist home? Those are the types of products I'm going to bring in. And that's how you then expand your product line. So you start with the one product. Now you know how to expand because you know what other things that she likes or they like.
Yeah. That's another thing you bring up in your book about selling with one product, which we did talk about on the last episode. So if you haven't listened to that episode, it's number 38. I'll link it in the show notes. But you do talk about starting with one product and then creating maybe variations rather than adding new product lines, like shifting from a solid towel to a striped towel I think that's so smart. And so many people are quick to want to create new items. And there's nothing wrong with that, because there's a lot of the people listening are going to have that like artistry where creating is part of their business. But there's also a lot of value in building on what already works.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I could have built my entire business on the gray towel that I sold. Like, I could have just sold that, right? So like, sometimes we want to add complication for no reason. Doing the same thing over and over again, like the boring thing, that's what works. And it's hard to, right? Especially as a creative, you want to keep being creative, but a lot of times what you have in front of you, selling those, what's your best selling product? Cool. Know what your best seller is and just focus on it. Because I would make mistakes of ordering too much inventory of not my best selling towel, and then I would sell out of it, the best selling one. So now I'm sitting on this inventory that is more difficult to sell, and I don't have my money maker, because cash flow is always an issue in retail, right? You're always investing in inventory ahead of time. So being able to plan out that inventory based on knowing what sells well, stick with it. And if you want to add more products, sticking with the formula of, is it a supplementary product or is it a complementary product? Does this new product make my best seller better to use, easier to use? Does it add to that product, or does it somehow align with it? Think about earrings, necklace, a bracelet. Cool. Right? Like, those things make sense to sell together.
I think it also goes back to knowing what your goal is. If you are a creative and your goal is to create lots of things, that's okay. You just have to know sales are going to come in differently if you have a lot of one-of-the-kind items rather than selling the same thing over and over.
And think about the big artists that we all know. They have a very specific look, style that is notable. Even the artists who have different periods and like they do different styles, but they create within that one style for a long time and they become really known for that. So you want to be able to have that identity of, this is how I look as an artist to the world, right? People should be able to look at your work and be like, that's theirs.
Absolutely. So I completely agree. Okay. I feel like we could talk forever. I just said that on the last podcast episode. I have the best guests and they're so fun to talk to. So thank you so much for being here. Tell us how we can get the book, first of all.
Yeah. So it's on Amazon. If you want the physical copy, the paperback's on Amazon. There's also a Kindle edition. If you want to try it, just super low risk, you can get it for $1. It's the PDF version. So you can download that. So it's not going to be on your Kindle, but you can get the entire book for just $1 to get started. I'm sure, Erin, are you going to link to that?
Yes, I will link to that in the show notes. I grabbed the paperback so that I could highlight. I have 10 post-its in there. So the paperback.
It really is. And it's like 100 pages. It's a quick read. It's designed to, you don't want to sit and read. You want to take the action. So it gives you that framework so you can do the work.
Yes. Get the book on Amazon, or we'll have the link in the show notes. The other thing I want to ask, I ask everyone this, what is something that you're currently learning in your own business? I know you have your own e-commerce business. So I really love to ask you this from the e-commerce perspective, since so many of our listeners are e-commerce. What is something you're currently learning in that business or working on in that business that, you know, is new to you, just something that you're currently working through?
Yeah. So one thing that's really new that I've never done before, I used to have a hard line in the sand that I would never do this, but it's selling in person. We just did a home and garden show, and I'm doing a Mother's Day market coming up. So getting in front of people and getting their immediate feedback, oh my gosh, it's been so helpful just even this past weekend. It definitely makes me know that I love e-commerce and selling in person is not what I love to do. But just even doing it a couple times has really opened up my understanding of who my target market is, what questions they have, what concerns they have about the product. And now I can go back to the website and make sure that those questions and concerns are being addressed on there. So super helpful to talk to people.
That's a great one. I really like the in-person part of that, like getting feedback. Not that I want to do shows or anything, but I have worked shows with in the past. And it's like you get unfiltered real questions and you get unfiltered real thoughts, where they didn't have time to polish the words that they were saying and they didn't have to think about it over and over. They're just asking you on the spot. And I think that there's so much value in that. And it's also really good insight for, like you said, your FAQ page, also for SEO. What are people thinking when they say this? Like, when you're at these shows, take notes so that you don't forget, because you can get some really incredible information from the people that are showing up there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a notebook. We did that, wrote down people that we met. Lots of connections are made there. So it's a great opportunity. Yeah,
that's awesome. Grace, where's the best place people can hang out with you and just learn more from you and about what you do?
So I am on TikTok pretty much exclusively. I'm a little bit on Instagram, but you can find me Shopify Simplified on TikTok.
Yes, I will link to Grace's TikTok. She shares really great tips for e-commerce and marketing and Shopify, which I love seeing. I love following you on TikTok. So I'll definitely have that in the show notes. I'll have the link to your website, the link to your book. And thank you so much for being here and sharing your formula and your expertise in retail. It's so valuable.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to the Product Powerhouse podcast. It means so much to me that you take the time out of your day to listen to this podcast. It's my favorite thing to create, and I am so grateful that you've taken the time to listen. If you enjoyed this podcast or you have listened to other episodes and enjoyed those, it would mean the world to me if you could take a minute out of your day to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. This helps me get the show out to more people just like you who are out there trying to grow their own product-based business.